This podcast is brought to you by WEDI, the preeminent national membership association for health IT guidance and collaboration. Recognized and trusted as a formal advisor to the Secretary of Health and Human Services, WEDI is the leading authority on the use of health IT to efficiently improve health information exchange, enhance care quality, and reduce cost. To learn more about WEDI member benefits and educational offerings, please visit our website, wedi.org. Welcome to the Collective Voice of Health IT, a WEDI podcast. Hello, everyone. It's Michael McNutt with WEDI. From our February 2024 Health Equity Forum and Workshop in Washington, D.C., we have a fantastic community-based organization panel, part one of two. Our panelist, Leanne Eagle, Director of Health and Wellness Program with MAC and the Chief Operating Officer of the Living Well Center of Excellence, Stephanie Archer-Smith, Executive Director for Meals on Wheels of Central Maryland, June Simmons, President and CEO of Partners in Care Foundation, and Dr. Monique Powell-Davis, Executive Vice President of Medical Services with Mary's Center. The moderator, Dr. Mark Rabner, Chief Medical Officer with CRISP Shared Services.
So my name is Mark Rabner. I am a pediatrician and preventive medicine physician. I'm also Chief Medical Officer for CRISP Shared Services. And our panel today is from our community-based organization panel. Before I get started, so CRISP Shared Services is a nonprofit organization who partners with local health information exchanges. We support health information exchanges in Maryland, DC, Virginia, West Virginia, Connecticut, and Alaska. I've been asked to moderate this panel. I've had the privilege of working with some of these experts at community-based organizations. And I hope it's okay if I start with so I'm a pediatrician, so I always bring it back to the patient. If I start with a quick clinical vignette of a patient I saw not too long ago, 7-year-old girl. So I work in at Children's National in DC on the inpatient side. And so a 7-year-old girl came in through the emergency department with an asthma exacerbation. It was pretty severe exacerbation. It was almost like she had run up 5 flights of stairs. She had trouble catching her breath. When I listened to it with a stethoscope, we couldn't really hear lung sounds when she was breathing. Luckily, we as the clinical team have the expertise and the team members to be able to treat her and send her home. Unfortunately, this was the third time she was admitted to the hospital in 3 years. What we learned was that her house had mold and mice that her landlord wouldn't address. And so as the clinical team, there's very little I can do to help that patient when they go home. I know that she's going to come back because she's going back to that environment that really I have no impact on. And so that's where I really have, where the walls of the clinic and hospital end and the community begins, if you will. And our experts on this panel can really speak to why community-based organizations are so powerful for addressing some of these social needs and needs that I can't address when patients leave my clinic. So I'll let each panelist introduce themselves. Before I do that, I would like it if we could just do a quick raise of hands of who's in the audience so we can get a better idea of kind of where you're all coming from. Healthcare delivery sites. Okay, any payers? Okay, community-based organizations? Great. Health IT vendors? Health information exchange? Fantastic. And anyone else I missed? Standards, organizations. all right, well, thank you for that. So I'll hand it over to June to introduce herself.
Want my chair?
Go ahead.
Doesn't work. Oh, there it is. Okay. So I'm June Simmons. I'm founding CEO at Partners in Care Foundation in Southern California, a CBO, one of the pioneers of the Community Care Hub you've probably been hearing about, and also as Kelly Cronin mentioned, have the honor of being the co-chair of the Partnership to Align Social Care. So we take that same concept forward. Partners in Care is a not working. There we go. Is a CBO that is really interested in direct services that address all the disparities that we see, but is also interested in systems change. So we work to build new models of care, like the Community Care Hub. So everything we do is around what happens at home. We heard the first speaker this morning say people spend 1 hour in the doctor's office, the nurse practitioner's office a year, and the rest happens at their own hand. So we're very interested in the rest of the hours and the way that people are resourced to care for themselves. We created a hub about 10 years ago in partnership with Blue Shield of California. So California is a kind of a big place, and we were asked to go statewide. I think we were about a $10 million budget at the time for our whole agency. We've grown some since then, but we have agencies all across California, so we can go see in the home anybody who's identified needing social care with a local provider. So the hub holds a cadre of agencies that have been commonly trained and supported and share some kind of IT, I hesitate to say health IT system, but anyway, IT, and offer a range of services, especially care coordination, but we have specialty service lines. We have a food service line as a hub. We have a private duty network of agencies across the state and so on, so quite diverse. And so we just wanted to show one of the biggest issues for us is that it's very difficult to achieve sufficient volume. Anything that's too small has trouble standing up. So that does drive one, especially if you're interested in large regional delivery systems that can cover all the people who are most in need. It drives you to multiple payers and arrangements. And once you do that, you have extreme complexity. So from an IT perspective, that drives a great deal of fragmentation, customization. Later, you'll be hearing from Marilena Rivas, who directs our hub, and she lives with us every day. So we're delighted to be talking about healthcare integration of social care and healthcare, and really being able to do business together, if you will, care for people in meaningful ways, identify them, connect with them, and move it forward. So more to come.
Hi, everyone.
I'm trained as a social worker, I should have said.
My name is Leanne Eagle. I'm the chief of operations officer. I started my career doing senior care, so we've come a long way. So way back in 2015, we were asked by the State Department on Aging to become a hub. I was like, well, what is this? We started our work around the evidence-based programs. We have a very special person in the audience that's been with me since beginning, is Sue. Sue Amalakamar. She came from NCOA. So she gave us all the insight and the power to move all of this forward. When they said statewide, I was a little scared at first, but then we got our feet underneath of us. So we became the Center of Excellence in 2015 under a sustainability plan for the state of Maryland. So they had a very forethinking image. And as we came to be, the same as June, we were one of the first 12 hubs in the country. So we've been taught many learning collaboratives along the way. We've worked together. We've partnered with all the other 12, and we've learned from each other. We've learned from our our gains and our mistakes. So it's been quite a journey. We are part of a AAA network, which means we're part of an area agency on aging, which is a nonprofit. We're one of two nonprofits in the state. We came in existence in 1972. So that's just, and we have multiple, we have like 32 hospital partners. We work with 32 hospitals across the state. We work with Maryland on my primary cares, our state department on aging, the physician practices. So we'll learn more about that later, but we know that Maryland is very unique. So you're going to learn more about that later. And I'll pass this over to more of my Maryland and DC counterparts.
Good afternoon. I am Monique Powell Davis. I'm an obstetrician gynecologist by training, and I'm here on behalf of Mary Center for Maternal and Child Care. Mary Center is a federally qualified health center here in the DC metropolitan area that was founded in 1988 by Maria Gomez and a small group of about a dozen women who invested in caring for the war-torn immigrant women from Central America who were coming to this city, who were pregnant at the time. And from that very small group, we have grown to an organization now 35 years later with five sites around the DC metropolitan area. We service over 65,000 patients or participants annually. And in the early years of the organization's beginnings, it became very clear that healthcare alone could not address the needs of the population adequately. And they began what they term and what we call the social change model, where we incorporate education and social services along with healthcare in an effort to build better communities and improve quality of life. Inherent in that is, when we say education, most of the population we serve, about 60 to 70%, have Spanish as their first language. So there are English classes that are taught on a two-generational model for both parent and child. We have GED services. We have training for medical assistant certification, early childhood development classes. So those are the areas that help to build stability and economic wealth building, job development opportunities. When it comes to social services, people need assistance with what we now know or term social barriers to healthcare and barriers to quality of life, transportation services, access and application for assistance programs. They need home visiting services. They need food. They need shelter. They need legal assistance and aid. So where we could not provide or adopt those services in-house, we partner with other organizations in the community to help provide those. And hence, we have grown and become one of the, I'd say, not the largest, of course, in the area, but definitely one of the nation's leading FQHCs in the country. So I'm here. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Archer-Smith. I'm the Executive Director for Meals on Wheels of Central Maryland. Most people probably know the name Meals on Wheels. You've heard of Meals on Wheels. We're one of a member organization of 5,000 organizations across the country. Meals on Wheels of Central Maryland was actually one of the first. Our mission to keep homebound aging adults and disabled adults living safely and independently at home was born from the vision of two women in 1960 who believed and sort of intuitively understood that nutrition and human contact would make people healthier and keep people living at home. And since that time, we have grown to be a central organization that serves throughout Central Maryland 2,500 aging adults every day. And we do nutrition services. We provide home-delivered meals, but we do so much more than that. We have a whole cadre of volunteers that support us. And what we do or how we do it is as important as what we do. And those volunteers get to know the people that they deliver Two, they understand and trust the volunteers, and they're able to report back to us in real time so that we, our case managers, can respond. Those volunteers are trained to see changes in condition. They're trained to recognize safety issues. And again, they can send that back to us through a mobile app that we can respond to in real time and then, you know, plan a course of action. But we also provide a lot of other support services in addition to our case managers who also do the comprehensive assessments for each individual. We have services that we offer them, other services. They could be things as basic as grocery shopping assistance, so pairing a volunteer with someone who needs other items beyond the meals that we're delivering. But it also includes things like housing repair. It includes, it even includes something as simple as pet food delivery, because many people, you know, are living at home with their pets and they're living very isolated lives. That isolation also is key to what we do, because we are trying to, with everything that we develop and with every strategy that we use, we are trying to increase the human contact and reduce that isolation. We have understood these two things and sort of anecdotally have many stories to tell about them, that they work and that they keep people healthier at home. But it's been the last, I say, 10 years that we've really been thinking about building and supporting that evidence base. A particular program that was important to us that really sort of launched our work with health partnerships was the More Than a Meal studies that came from the Brown University. And that was a study of Meals on Wheels participants where they compared those that had that were on a waiting list, those that were receiving frozen weekly meals, and those that were getting the daily home-delivered meal and that personal contact. And what they found was it was that latter group who really fared better on all metrics. They were reporting that they felt safer and more independent at home. They were reporting less depressive symptoms. They were falling less frequently. They were going to the ER less frequently. So that was the sort of the springboard for us to really to begin to seek out these partnerships and do this work much more intentionally. And it just sort of underscores how important that work really is.
Great. Thank you for those introductions. To kick us off for our first question, can you talk a little bit about how you've leveraged data to better serve your communities?
Well, one of the ways that we receive data is to identify who should be served. We have a massive transformation of our Medicaid system in California, and enhanced care management and community supports are really social care opportunities. Health plans will send, they call a MIF, a large list, maybe 1,000, maybe 5,000 names on it. Data quality may or may not be good. And so that allows us to attempt to reach out, usually on our own dime, to attempt to locate and receive agreement from those people to let us be served. We're switching from a reactive health system where you serve who shows up to a proactive system where you're trying to find people in need and persuade them that we have something helpful to offer. So that's the beginning, the front end of our data. Then, as I noted in my other comments, every one of those places that we contract with has different definitions, has different kinds of terms, different workflows, different compliance standards, and often different software. So we're right now we're working on, I think, at least 7 softwares of others. Somewhere we have to enter in their data system and we can't get the data at all. So we're just converting to our own multi-payer care management program that will support our staff and without having to sign in and sign out multiple times, and we'll be able to have some guidance of, for this payer, be sure you do this, and be able to much more efficiently share and analyze data by creating a data warehouse and an integrator so we can actually learn better from what we do, because right now the data is very fragmented and very other-driven.
Well, I would say
she's the opposite extreme.
That you're only as good as your data. We learned that a long time ago, because when you want a partnership, you want, you know, on my contracts, we have to be able to feed back the data. So we were at a hospital meeting way back, like 2018, 2019, and we were in a meeting at a hospital, and Crisp was there, the executive director of Crisp, and I was like, if we don't find a way to partner with Crisp, I don't know what we're going to do. And Sue said, that's never going to happen. Well, today we have full access into Crisp, and the rest, we're still working together. And we use Crisp as a way to get a centralized referrals. So that way, when that patient is being entered into Crisp, the box is checked. So that's what gives us the ability to talk with the patient and not having to get that consent. So that's a beautiful thing. So we really encourage anyone that is partnering with us to use Crisp. We're going to hold the line on that pretty soon, where we actually have to get those referrals through Crisp, and we're going to do away with paper because it does make it a lot harder. So having that technology is very crucial. We also use it as a way to bi-directionally data share, because we need to let that primary care physician know, hey, your patient is getting Meals on Wheels 3 times a week, and they're doing fine, or they now have a falls plan. They've taken a falls class, like, or that we have a problem. Like, we're able to actually make that happen. The other thing that we use the data source for is to show an ROI. We're able to run a panel, and we're able to say, hey, we put through 276 people last year through for a fall falls program. Only 79 went back in. And by the way, we saved you $279,000 last year. Well, they're more apt to partner with us now, right? So when you look at that bigger picture, it really speaks to what we're trying to do. The other thing that we're involved in Maryland, you heard Kelly Cronin talk about. We are working with Cody and that MITRE project with CRISP, where we're actually building out that social determinants of health platform and the use cases around. We're going to look at transportation and food insecurity and care transition. So we're not using as many platforms, because we do have Epic is hooked to CRISP. So we are coming a long way. Are we there? Probably not quite yet, but we're getting closer. So that's the values that I see around data currently in Maryland.
I echo and my thoughts resonate quite well with both of my panelists here as it relates specifically to how we use data in a continuous sort of quality improvement way, right? We initially use that data to sort of drive our innovations and where to focus not only our resources, but what new projects of interest we may want to do a PDSA cycle on. We also, you know, gather that data to show how that particular project had impact, so that then we can leverage that to perhaps get funding to support expanding that kind of project, right? Certainly, we linked up with CRISP as well and try our best to allow data to be interoperable, I think is the term we like to use, where it, you know, feeds in very well so that the information that's from external sources can feed into and augment what we have within our own EHR. From our internal commitment, we have an entire department now. I mean, as we've grown, we've now have a division for quality and research that focuses continuously on analyzing our data, determining, you know, where and how we're performing and what it is that we could do, sort of informing the process of us making decisions for the organization and for the community so that we can better serve. So
I think there's a real benefit to being at the end here because I can say that all of the things that my colleagues here have talked about are things that are important to us in ways that we use data. I mean, the first really is in determining sort of where the need is and, you know, then designing services that would meet that need in the service delivery process. Also in the identification of getting to those that have the most, that are the most vulnerable, that have the deepest needs, because they're not always the ones that actually get service. So being able to identify them in a quick and fluid way is really helpful. I just want to give you an example of a project of that what we're doing to kind of illustrates all of these things that we're talking about. So as I mentioned earlier, we've been, you know, forging these partnerships for about 10 years, and with each one, in each project, we learn a little bit more and try to apply that. Our current project that we are doing is called the FAST project. FAST stands for the Food Access and Support Services Team. One of the things that we learned is that we're not the only food service provider. There are other food service providers in Maryland. So we wanted to be able to work together so that we could not duplicate services, so that we could scale services. But we wanted to use data to help us do that. And so we were partnered with CRISP and the University of Maryland Medical System that is identifying through metrics that are already in the electronic health record, people who are at the greatest need for these services. And then sending those referrals through CRISP so they can match them to the right service provider. So getting referrals is great, as you know, June mentioned in her presentation, but you get lots of referrals, you wind up with lots of different projects and lots of complexities to those projects. And you wind up with a lot of work that you have to do before you can deliver the service or identify the person that needs the service. So if we can do this in a streamlined way that keeps us from having to screen 100 people and only find 5 of them out of that 100 that were referred that are appropriate for our Meals on Wheels service, then we're going to be much better able to serve and provide the services that we can provide in an efficient way and serve more people in that way. So that's just kind of an example of how we can then take all that data and all those concepts and really apply it to the service delivery.
This has been the Collective Voice of Health IT, a WEDI podcast, where the healthcare IT community connects, collaborates, and creates solutions for a better health system. Find all our episodes as well as information on our association at our website, wedi.org. Thank you for joining us, and be safe.